This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast Show 922. What's going on, everyone? This is David Green, your host of the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Podcast, here today with a Seeing Green episode, and I'm joined by Rob Abasolo. We've got an awesome episode for you. If you've never heard a Seeing Green show, we take questions from you, our listener base, and we answer them for everybody to hear. Today's show starts off with a live question where we go back and forth with the caller, and then we have some recorded and written questions that we share with everybody. We're going to talk about house hacking. We're going to talk about options to scale when it comes to house hacking. We're going to be talking about what happens when you hit lightning in a bottle and you grow a big portfolio and you're not sure what to do next. And we're going to be talking about if you should keep a property with a lot of equity and a great rate, or if you should sell it and start scaling a new portfolio. All that and more in today's Seeing Green. Rob, how are you feeling today?
I'm excited for the curveballs that are going to be thrown our way. And I'm excited to hit some home runs, hopefully for everyone at home. Help them get a little perspective on how to do this whole real estate thing.
Yeah, so let's see how Rob does when he takes his at-bats. Let's get into our first question today from Ethan.
Oh, before we jump into it, just a quick reminder, if you ever want to submit your own questions for a Seeing Green episode, head on over to biggerpockets.com/David. And who knows, maybe we'll pick a Rooski, one of your cues.
All right, our first question comes from Ethan here. Ethan's got quite the portfolio, 20 single family homes in Nebraska, two flips, a short-term rental in Scottsdale, a short-term rental in the Smokies, 11 single family houses in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and 50 doors in Illinois, as well as a farm ground in New England and Kansas. England, I don't know if I left anything out there. Maybe you also own a private jet, some oil rigs, perhaps a yacht you put on Turo.
Maybe it'd be better to ask where Ethan doesn't have real estate.
Being diversified is always a good thing. I don't own anything in New England. That's Nebraska, but I'll have to take a look in New England.
Good point there. That does make sense. There's not a lot of farms, I would imagine, in New England. Nebraska does make a lot more sense there. It's like, what?
I was like, does that farmland go from Nebraska or New England to Kansas? It's like a giant farm.
I'm in Vegas at a Keller Williams event, and I have not been sleeping enough, and it is very visible here. But don't worry, I am still awake enough to answer your question. So, Ethan, let me know, what is on your mind?
Simple question I get from my wife often. You know, I've been actively growing this portfolio the last decade. I probably have no end in sight as far as, you know, what is going to be the destination. And my wife asks me every time we talk about a property or even our existing portfolio, is when is enough going to be enough? We have a big family, six little kids. Oldest is 11, youngest is going to be 3 here in about a week. So I understand those things are, there's a lot of expensive things coming down the roads with medical, weddings, school. We go to a Catholic school here in Nebraska. So again, it's a high operating cost family, and I understand that and try and want to prepare, but she's very humble and very simple. So, and I know you guys are actively growing. It seems like those wheels never stop, kind of relatable to that. So curious where the finish line is for you guys.
Well, let me ask you this. Are you still working a W-2 or are you like a full-time real estate investor?
I do have a full-time job. I'm an independent contractor, but I do have a full 9-to-5 job, yes.
Wow, okay, cool. And then what is your income from your real estate portfolio?
I actually updated it today. My monthly cash flow is about $3,400. That's just in Nebraska. The other stuff is with the partnership, so it's him and I, so I didn't figure anything that into our monthly income.
No worries. Well, I think it really depends, man, honestly, on like what your goal is. And you can kind of start to sniff it out pretty quickly. Like I talk to people, you know, friends in this industry that their goal is like, I want to be a billionaire. And I'm like, okay, well, then I don't know when enough is enough, because it'll take a very long time to get there. But then there are people like me that I've realized there is sort of like this, there really is this moment where a certain amount of money doesn't really change happiness or anything like that. And so for me, I always find that where I'm trying to go is to where I could make the income that I was making at my full-time job in real estate. I'm not going to say passively, but consistently with doing some work. I would never really count on this idea of retiring and being completely passive in real estate. I think you'll still have to work for it. But I mean, it depends on how much you love real estate. And I understand your wife is wanting to keep it more simple, but if you feel like you want more out of this and you want to keep doubling or tripling up where your income is, then you may not really be close to enough yet. So, I mean, I don't know enough about you to know this yet, but how much do you love real estate? And let's start there.
I enjoy it a lot. I mean, it honestly, I go back to the original Bigger Pocket days a decade ago, and I was reading through some of the forums last night and some of my inboxes with guys, and it's really kind of got me fired up again, the interaction that we can find amongst the real estate space. So it is something I really enjoy, whether that be the tenant relationships or even just the finding new deals. I really like to travel, and I think that's one thing my wife, I know that she likes to travel as well, and I try and push her, like, these future opportunities are going to allow us to go wherever we want to. So that's one thing I try and push, kind of try and plant that seed a little bit and water it as much as I can. But
sure. And the other thing I was going to ask that I probably should get some clarity on is, like, do you want to work your job for the rest of your life? Because that's important too. Some people are like, I hate working for the man, I need to get out of this. And then there are other people that are like, yeah, I want to work my solid job for the rest of my life. And so I think that kind of factors into your decision a little bit too.
Right. And I do have a great job, work for a great group of guys. So that is probably something, I mean, I would say normal retirement age, you know, that 50, mid-50s range, which is going to be 20 years, which as fast as the life goes right now, especially with young kids, it's going to come quick. So I'd say 20 more years of that, you know, full-time job, and I'll be ready to be done.
Yeah. So then honestly, this is like my favorite scenario to be in, to be completely honest with you, because there's so many people that want to replace their salary with real estate, quit their job. And if you make $50,000 to $100,000, that's really hard to replace with real estate. It's like really, really, really hard. You're not super far off from that, but you would have to triple how much you're making right now to make $10,000 a month. Where the power of real estate comes in for many, many people, especially in your circumstances, if you're okay with working, you know, for the rest of your career and working a 9-to-5, and that's where you're going to make your money, then you're in such an amazing spot, because if you have an extra $3,500, let's say you scale that up a little bit to $5,000 a month coming into your pocket, that's life-changing money for a family. That is vacation money. That's where the fun of real estate starts to really ramp up, because you actually have cash flow to use for expendable income and vacations and everything like that. And then where it all comes to a head is when you're 65 and you do retire from your job, and not only did you make $5,000 a month doing real estate, you now have this portfolio of 20 single family homes and this and that and all that stuff that's all paid off, worth multi-millions is my guess. And then you can sell all that and retire a millionaire. That to me is like the best place to be versus the person that's trying to get to $10,000 a month in real estate and wants to quit their job tomorrow. So I actually think you're probably going to find a lot more happiness being a small and mighty investor, as our friend Coach Chad Carson, you know, would talk about. And we did an episode with him back on episode 795, talking about his book, Small and Mighty.
Yeah, that's awesome. Good perspective and definitely relatable. I've always said it, the real estate, I don't think provides my family any value, even when I'm, you know, whether it's on our deathbed or down the road. So I'm sure the plan long-term would be to start selling. Pay, you know, a house at a time will pay for a wedding, hopefully, at that point. But
absolutely. I mean, you buy $150,000 house, and, you know, 15 years from now, I'd like to think that house has been paid down considerably and has it appreciated a lot more as well. And at that point, maybe you can sell it and use some of those to fund those things. So I think I find happiness in with real estate funding the life that I want versus trying to like chase some big arbitrary goal of, I don't know, like I said, $1 billion. I have a lot of friends that want to be billionaires. I'm like, why? If you make $1 million a month or $100 million a month, your lifestyle probably isn't going to change all that much if you're actually a prudent investor and you are frugal. If you got to $1 billion, you know, I don't know. To me, it's like, it becomes this really weird competition with real estate investors. And sometimes I'm just like, oh, honestly, I'm pretty good where I'm at. I like to be happy in real estate. And I think for me, the whole enough question really comes down to, at what point does real estate make you unhappy? And that's when real estate is enough.
That's awesome. That is some very, very solid insight. So it helped this year. We were able to travel to Scottsdale and stay in our own Airbnb, my wife and I and our two friends. So I do think that provided a good insight for her to say, okay, maybe this is why we're doing it. But I'd love to have an Airbnb or a home in every travel you know, high travel or high vacation place in the country. That'd be a future goal of mine.
Well, and I could have given you a much shorter answer and just said, enough is when your wife says it's enough. And that's the right answer to that question. But yeah, I think you have to kind of throw her a bone and make sure that she's down for the ride too. Otherwise, yeah, there's a turning point with real estate where it's like, man, I'm making $3,400 a month to, I'm only making $3,400 a month. And you want to try to stop that second sentiment from ever coming in.
Right. Understood.
All right, Ethan, do you mind if I offer you another perspective here?
Of course.
All right, before I do, let's take a quick break and we'll come back to hear my thoughts.
Spring is here, and you know what that means. Fresh flowers, fresh air, fresh starts. So why not take a fresh look at SimpliSafe Home Security? SimpliSafe protects my home during the busy spring season when I'm out leveling up my portfolio. But you know why I really love SimpliSafe? Because it's very easy to install. As a matter of fact, I set up my entire system, my personal home, which is a 4-bedroom, 3-bath, in less than 30 minutes. They've got a super simple app, as whenever we're on vacation, we have friends come by the house to water the plants, check on the house, whatever it is. We're able to turn off our alarm right before our friends get to the house and turn it on right after they leave instantly. SimpliSafe offers a wide variety of high-tech sensors that detect break-ins, fires, and floods. They've got indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch day and night, 24/7 professional monitoring at less than $1 a day, and I challenge you to figure out what you can buy for less than $1 a day. And with the 60-day money-back guarantee, you can try SimpliSafe risk-free. SimpliSafe has given me and many of our listeners real peace of mind, and we want you to have it too. So, go get 20% off of your system today when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring at simplisafe.com/pockets. That's simplisafe.com/pockets. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. The easiest way to collect rent? Rent App. Rent App is a seamless, secure, free payment tool for small rental property owners like you and me. Built by a team of fintech veterans behind Square and Cash App, Rent App uses ACH bank transfers to deposit rent directly into your account. Landlords love Rent App for its unbeatable convenience. Isn't it time you made rent collection easier? Rent App, the free and easy way to collect rent. Learn more at rent.app/landlord. That's rent.app/landlord. Every lender loves to talk about how easy it is to get a mortgage. Then, when it's time to fund your next deal, they ask for your full financials, your blood type, your mother's famous spaghetti recipe, and a map to the Fountain of Youth. Sound familiar? You got all that handy, right? Why not switch to a lender who actually makes qualifying for a loan easy? A lender like Host Financial. Host Financial takes the tedious tax returns, endless W-2s, and time-consuming financial requests out of the picture. Their light doc and common sense underwriting guidelines mean frictionless transactions every time. You'll even be able to use the actual or projected income of the short-term or long-term rental you're looking to purchase or pull equity out of. That's what lending built for investors looks like. So take the next step and grow your portfolio faster. Visit hostfinancial.com to request a quote in as fast as 60 seconds, which is faster than this ad. If not, it's pretty close. That's host, H-O-S-T, financial.com. Again, that's host, H-O-S-T, financial.com.
And welcome back. We're here with Ethan, who's got a lot going on in the real estate world, and he's trying to figure out when enough is enough. When we say things like when is enough enough, the answer is typically like, I have as much as I need. How much more do I need? And it starts to feel like it's a greedy. And then implied in that is life would be better if I wasn't doing this, which oftentimes very well may be the case. It's like, I'm not spending as much time with my kids. I'm not doing as many things as I could be doing that I want. And that is a great question to ask, is like, is accumulating more real estate the best move for my specific life? But for a lot of people, I think the assumption that it's like what I have is good and it could only get better is erroneous. Like, I went through a 2-year period. I'm kind of barely now climbing out of it, it looks like, where business got decimated, my portfolio got decimated. I was the victim of like a lot of property fraud where people stole titles to my properties. That forced me into a 1031 where I had to buy a lot of real estate in a really short period of time. Right when I did that, because I had a lot of BRRRR properties projects going on, interest rates doubled. Everything went wrong at one time. And what had appeared at one point to be way more reserves and way more conservativeness than what I would have possibly needed actually became, thank God I have that, because the plane would have crashed if I didn't have a buffer that was that big. And everyone had asked me that same question. Well, David, when is enough enough? Why are you working so much? Why are you doing this? And I think in my gut, I knew the answer and this confirmed it. It's because the more real estate that you accumulate, the more risk you're taking on. We don't talk about it like that a lot of the time. And it doesn't get presented that way because the market's done nothing but go up. We've had a great 10-year run where everything just went up. And so you don't think about the risk you're taking on because it rarely ever occurs. But when those rates shot up really quickly, it got exposed that, oh, this is actually a risky thing and things can go wrong. And it was, to me, it was like a perfect storm. I hope to God nobody else ever has the perfect storm of like what I had. But I am very glad that I had a lot of equity in my properties. I am very glad I had way more in reserves than I thought. I am very glad I was still working and I had not retired and I didn't have the ability to make money through stepping up, you know, efforts with whether that was flipping houses or selling properties or running businesses more. I just want to put that out there for you and for everybody else. If it's just getting more to get more, it's a good question to ask. Why am I doing this? But if it's getting more to offset the risk that we've taken off building big portfolios, well, then I would say keep working, keep saving, but do it in a way that doesn't take away from the goals you have in life, your family. Do the things that you like doing, do the things you enjoy doing, but don't just be like, well, should I quit the whole thing?
I get that. Yeah, and that's been a big part of why we started to go out of state. It was through a lot of the stuff, again, through Bigger Pockets, that I realized I thought I had to be able to touch it, see it, feel it to invest in real estate, and quickly realized that wasn't the case. So we've been kind of backing off what we have here in Nebraska and moving out of state. And my wife knows I can't touch those. So that's made her happy on that side of it.
Yeah, that's great. Rob, you're scaling probably one of the fastest real estate investors / content creators out there on the interwebs, right? Is this something you've thought about as much as you're taking on right now and as fast as things are growing, what you're doing to kind of counter some of the risk that you're taking on as your portfolio grows as fast as it is?
Yes, David, this is all I think about, especially as someone that's looking at getting into developments and buying developments that are typically $3 to $10 million at a time. What I've learned is that we have this idea that we want to make cash so much on the front end and like cash flow, cash flow, cash flow, that we never want to hire people, because when we hire people, we see that as making less money. But what I'm discovering is to really scale, you do have to hire people, make less money on the front end. But in the long term, you'll actually build so much more wealth because of what you can do with teams. And that's the thing that I've never really unlocked building a 40-unit short-term rental portfolio, is I was just doing it all by myself and I was too greedy. And now as I've learned, if I can bring more people on, be a little less greedy right now, it'll actually set me up for the rest of my life. So yes, existential question that you just asked me there, David, but it's the only thing I think about whenever it comes to real estate.
Well, Rob, you need to read Scale. If that's where you're at, the book that you talk about all the time and haven't actually read.
I guess so.
Ethan, anything we can tie up for you there?
I do have one last question, especially Rob, you mentioned, you know, these bigger portfolios or bigger books or properties that you guys are buying. Do you get any sort of anxiety or like buyer's remorse when you get the acceptance on an offer? Or if you sell a property, it's like every time that offer's accepted, it's like this rush of dopamine. I can't decide if it's fear or anxiety or joy, but it's the same thing every single time. I'm just curious in your guys' experience if that's the same thing.
No, I'm usually pretty relieved, but I'm a little scared, but I'm always happy that I did it. That little buyer's remorse is really short-lived and will never compare to whatever the opposite of buyer's remorse is. When you miss a good deal that you know was in front of you, that's a lot more painful to see this property that I just stalled on for like 12 hours or a day and it just went because I knew deep down it was a good one and it flew off the shelf and I'm like really sad at myself and disappointed that I didn't move faster. That's a way worse pain than the short-lived buyer's remorse that I'll have on having an offer accepted. That's common. Everyone has that. But for the most part, the excitement typically takes over pretty quickly.
Right on. Good.
All right. Thanks, Ethan. Keep us up to speed with what goes on there, man. Appreciate you.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for submitting your questions. We would not have a show without you. So give yourself a little pat on the back for making all this possible. And remember, I want more of them. So head over to biggerpockets.com/David and submit your questions. And who knows, maybe we can feature you on a future episode of Seeing Green. All right. If we've changed your life or if you're just enjoying this show, let us know. Make sure that you like, comment, and subscribe to the channel. And let us know on YouTube what you think about today's show. All right, moving on. We have an Apple review to go over, and then we will move on with the show. The review says, the more you know, the better you do. I've been listening and learning from the Bigger Pockets podcast for the past 3 years. This free resource has led me to making some really solid real estate decisions. Did I say it's free? I share the podcast often, and I really hope that others see the value in this podcast. From Great B. Yates via the Apple Podcast app. Well, thank you for that. That's awesome. I remember, Rob, when you first stumbled upon our show and we had you on and you were an amazing guest and you thought that I hated you, but I didn't. I thought you were really cool. And you had similar things to say. So if you, did you ever leave us a review, Rob? Curious.
I was too hurt. I was like, David doesn't like me.
We got over that. Now we're besties. Besties trying to change the short-term rental landscape one property at a time.
But how funny would that be if I went and left us a review right now? Hey, I've been listening to the show for 5 years. This is a 5-star show. It's my favorite. Rob is so handsome.
That would be funny. You should do that. You should leave a review and say why you're better than David. All right, everybody. We hope that you're enjoying the show so far. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back with a question from Zach about what to do after his house hack.
Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages. Until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right, get high quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
Pretty good little episode, right? While you were listening, you could have been getting paid rent with RentApp. Landlords love RentApp because it makes rent collection a breeze. RentApp uses ACH bank transfers to deposit funds directly into your account. Setup is straightforward for renters, and landlords don't need to download anything. Both have peace of mind with the digital transaction history. Isn't it time you made landlording a little easier? RentApp, the best way to pay or collect rent. Learn more at rent.app/landlord. That's rent.app/landlord. Finding rental property insurance has been a headache for the past few years. You know the feeling. You're scrambling, calling 20 different insurance agencies in a dozen different cities, struggling to protect your portfolio at the right cost. But I'm going to tell you a little secret that'll change everything. Veteran investors don't go through the everyday insurance companies. They just use NREG. NREG, that's N-R-E-I-G, provides insurance solely for real estate investors. They've built the largest insurance program in the country for residential tenant-occupied, vacant, and renovation properties. The best part? You can put all your properties on one insurance schedule and one monthly bill. And you can add, change, or remove properties without having to cancel one policy and purchase another. They insure properties from single-family rentals up to 20-unit multifamily dwellings, vacation rentals, mobile homes, condos, and more. Trade catchy jingles for cash flow with insurance made for investors. Visit nreg.com/bppod to request a proposal. nreg.com/bppod. Deciding how to invest your capital can be extremely challenging, especially when the market is constantly changing. That's why it's never been more important to partner with a company that has a great track record. The BAM Capital executive team has successfully navigated through the Great Recession, COVID-19, and the current interest rate environment while delivering maximized returns to their partners. BAM Capital is a trusted multifamily syndicator with over $1.3 billion in transactions, delivering a historical average of over 35% IRR with an average hold period of 3.5 years. And BAM Capital has consistently paid preferred return distributions for over 50 consecutive months, has not lost limited partners' capital, and has not called capital past the subscription amount. BAM Capital's disciplined investment strategy is targeting undermanaged institutional quality trophy assets throughout the U.S. heartland for accredited investors investors who are looking for generational wealth building or monthly income opportunities. Their offerings target cash flow stability, capital preservation, long-term appreciation, and accelerated tax benefits. Join BAM Capital's over 1,200 investors across 44 states and get started today at BAMCapital.com. Again, that's BAMCapital.com. As home prices and interest rates continue to rise and inventory levels dip, it's getting harder to find quality flips and wholesale deals. When there's not enough on-market inventory to go around, it's time to start looking off-market. Lucky for you, there are millions of homeowners nationwide who own a property they need to get off their hands. I got two words for you, my friend. PropStream it. PropStream is the leading real estate data provider and recognized as a Tech 100 honoree by Housing Wire for the fourth consecutive year. With PropStream, you can search over 155 million properties nationwide using 120-plus search filters like pre-foreclosure, bankruptcy, pre-probate, failed listings, and more to help you find motivated sellers in seconds. PropStream offers both public record data and an MLS sales estimate that's over 99% accurate to help you get the most accurate comps even in non-disclosure states. PropStream also provides lead automation, skip tracing, and a marketing suite with emails, postcards, and custom landing pages to close more deals efficiently. Get started today with their 7-day free trial and get 50 leads for free. Head on over to www.propstream.com/BP. That's www.propstream.com/BP.
All right, and we're back. Thanks for sticking around. Zach's got a question about house hack strategy, and Rob and I are going to get into it. Let's hear Zach's question.
Hey, David. Zach Strucheski here. 27 years old. I'm a biomedical engineer by day, and I try to be a house hacker by night. I just bought my first single family home in Dearborn, Michigan. Looks like a good market for medium term. There's a hospital, DTW Airport's right there, and just general visitors of Michigan. My question is, after this rent by room house hack strategy, do I shift towards Airbnb, which seems like a market could get me about 2x what a long term could get, with I understand recommended 3 to 5x? Do I rent by room continuing once I leave, rent out my area, getting around the same with arguably less work? Or do I just go to a long term rental, sacrificing some long term cash flow that I would need to supplement my current job? Appreciate the help. Always awesome. Thanks.
So with his buffet of options, where should he start?
So basically, he could just hit the easy button right now, replace himself with someone else to rent his room in that home, and cash flow like $800 a month. A little bit more than that, but I think that's a pretty good option.
So you're saying that he should continue to rent by the room?
I think so. I mean, if we examine his other options, he could do a long-term rental. Long-term rentals in his area, he mentioned, are $1,500 to $1,800 to do that. So he wouldn't make as much money doing that. And then short-term rentals in the area are looking at around a 31% occupancy. Again, this is information that we have on the back end. So for him to try to make money on Airbnb would be tough. What most people don't consider with short-term rentals is that there's a huge operational expense that goes into running a profitable short-term rental. Whereas long-term rentals are just fixed expenses for the most part. Short-term rentals, you start adding cleaning and what you pay to Airbnb and Vrbo. And it really takes a lot more money to be profitable in an Airbnb than a long-term rental at first glance. So I don't know if that's going to be his best route. And then, he can always go the medium-term rental route. A three-bedroom in his area goes for about $2,600 a month. However, it's not like you can just snap your finger and fill your place with a midterm rental tenant. Like, it's hard to do that, and you really have to work to find those tenants. And so because it seems like the safest option he has is to rent by the room, I would go that route. He's making a little less than he would with the midterm rental, but he won't have to work super hard to source that midterm rental tenant. So I think it's pretty clear. He just transitions from house hack to rent by the room.
You know what I love about your analysis there, Rob? You went over all the options, and you weighed each of them on their own merit. And it became pretty clear at the end of the day, hey, there's a lot of vacancy as a short-term rental. Hey, traditional rentals aren't bringing enough money. The rent by the room strategy here is like the perfect answer for this property. And then it's not that much work, especially if he goes forward with economies of scale. If he gets another house hack, he does the same thing. He rents by the room. He's got all the same systems he's using with his first property. that he could just transfer over onto the second one. And then he could do it again and then again and then again. Now he's got five houses. He's doing rent by the room. Now there's enough income that you can hire a person to sort of manage that little mini portfolio and just handle whatever little disputes come up with all of the tenants. And it's going to be the same disputes that happen all the time. So that person isn't going to take a ton of time. And you have a pretty efficient system that allowed you to scale five properties. And if you hit the point where you're like, you know what, it's too much work with all these rooms that I'm renting, fine, sell all five, 1031 into a small little apartment complex, buy a 10-unit place somewhere, and start over scaling again with these smaller little houses doing the same thing that you'll move into hotels. This is not a bad way to get started in a tough real estate market, building a portfolio and creating some equity.
Yeah, and he's pretty much already doing the rent by the room. All he has to do is put one tenant in there, easy peasy. Go make your... you know, your extra $880 a month, my man. That seems like a pretty solid plan to me. This next question comes to us from Robin in Idaho, who posted this question in the Bigger Pockets forums. Her question, should she sell her primary residence and use it as equity for her rentals? She says, we have a home worth about $650,000. We owe $350,000 in a place where we couldn't afford to sell and buy another property. They got it back during COVID times. Interest rate was 2.8%. And it was before a crazy boom out in Northwest Idaho. She says, we're stuck because my husband makes just enough to live. We've cut every possible expense and really want to acquire rentals, but can't find the capital. We have $250,000 in equity in the home after realtor cost. Is it crazy for us to sell, take the equity, and move to a better cash flow market like Atlanta or Fayetteville, North Carolina, and start our rental acquisition there? And then she asks, what are some great, even if they're crazy, strategies for building the real estate empire with $250,000? If we could go anywhere and we will do anything. All right. That's an interesting question.
You know, short answer here, I don't think it's crazy, actually. When I started my whole Burr run in North Florida, that's where I buy most of them, I sold a property in Arizona that had appreciated more than the rents had kept up with it. It was basically a property that had a new housing development that was being built close to this house. And so the value of my house kept going up because the comps that were being built were brand new homes that were more and more expensive. But there were so many of these new homes that were built that were bought by investors that I really couldn't keep getting tenants in my area or rents to keep going up because they had too many options. So what I found is the value of the home went up faster than the rents could keep up with.
So scrolling around in the forums here, some of the answers were, it sounds like they're living on a single income. So one solution is get a job and get, you know, work on that double income to save up money so that you can buy another rental. Some other people said you should house hack. And then other people said it's too risky right now to sell. I'll give you my take. First and foremost, I think that, I mean, I hate to sound like a broken record, especially since we just did a whole, you know, question on this. I love house hacking. And I think for you, getting a job might be pretty tough. Maybe you're accustomed to a certain lifestyle. I would go the route of figuring out how I can make money the fastest. There's two ways to do that. One, you can house hack, rent out a room in your property. Maybe that makes you an extra $300, $400, $500, $600, $700, $800. I'm not really sure in that market, but let's just call it $500 a month. That right there, that helps. It's not going to be what turns into a real estate millionaire, but it definitely puts a dent in things over time. That's one. Two is I probably would try to get some sort of extra job. You don't have to go full time. You don't have to go back to corporate life. You don't have to work a 9-to-5. Maybe if it's even 10, 15, 20 hours, that alone right there, the money that you make there can compound pretty quickly with the money that you're making on a house hack. I'm not a big fan necessarily of selling. I mean, you always have this age old question of like, well, if I sell it, where am I going to go? And you mentioned that, hey, we live in a place where we can't afford to sell and buy another property. Well, if that's the case, you kind of have this once in a lifetime opportunity to own this house that you can't afford to live in because you bought it at the right time. That to me is always going to be the safest, more conservative route. I'm an aggressive investor by nature, but I always tell people, if you get this magical primary residence with the 2.8% interest rate, that should be your backup plan. That should be your ripcord in the case of like everything goes wrong. You can sell this property and cash in, you know, $250,000 if you really, really, really needed to. So for that reason, I'm always a big advocate of just hanging on to it. I know it's not a super sexy answer to say, hey, get a job, house hack, make an extra $10,000, $20,000 a year. But, you know, It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. And if you save up $10,000-$20,000 this year, house hacking and getting another job, and you do that next year as well, well, great. 2 years of hard work, saving, and preparation can actually put you into a position where maybe you do invest in a different, smaller market where $40,000 or $50,000, depending on what you can save up, does allow you the luxury of buying another rental property. But my answer is, if you sell it, where are you going to go? So for that reason, stay there. 2.8% interest. That's a beautiful thing in 2024. Don't mess with it. What do you think, David? I mean, that's my approach. I think a 2.8% interest rate in this world in 2024, it's the most beautiful thing ever. I think getting lucky and buying at the top of a boom is like amazing. And I think that they should build their net worth based on this amazing purchase that they made in 2021 and not sell it. I know it's a bit of a conservative answer, especially considering I am a little bit more aggressive, but that's how I feel. Sue me.
All right, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. I had a property in Arizona that I bought, and then they built a housing development right next to it. They built more and more expensive houses, making the value of my house go up. But a lot of those houses were bought by investors. So the rents never went up on my house because they couldn't raise them too high because they would just go rent one of the new homes. So I had growing equity without growing cash flow. I sold that property. I took the equity. I took it into North Florida, and that's what was my first burr. I pulled the money out. I bought my second burr, and I burred up to about 40 properties, maybe 50 at one point in that area off of that seed money from the one thing. So even if they do something like that and they lose that 2.8% interest rate, if you can turn it into a whole portfolio of other properties, it can make sense. The beauty of this dilemma is both options work. You keep a great rate, you keep a lot of equity, you win. Or you sell it and you take $300,000, $250,000 into another market. And if you can execute growing that capital, you win. I think the key here is, are there other opportunities and can you execute on them? Do you have the experience of an investor? Do you know what you're going to be doing? Do you feel confident in what you're going forward in? Or are you kind of just like slow and steady wins the race and you still need to slowly acquire properties? That's what I'd be looking at here. This is not the market where you can just go throw $250,000 into something and trust that it's going to work out well. There's a learning curve to whatever strategy you get into because there's a lot more competition. So in today's show, Rob and I talked about when enough is enough, when you should keep scaling and how you should keep scaling, which is great to know in case you ever hit that great run where you buy a whole bunch of property, including a farmhouse in New England. We talked about how to evaluate your opportunities after you do a house hack. That's something to think about. Like once you get the first one down, where do you go from there? We talked about selling a primary resident to build a rental property portfolio. And we talked about Rob's perspective as seeing solo. We also got into what's going on in Rob's life and in my life and in what you can do to support us. And we want to know, what can we do to support you all? So let us know in this YouTube comment what we at Bigger Pockets can do to help you with your goals. We will read those and we just may put those in a future episode of Seeing Green as well. Remember to submit your questions at biggerpockets.com/David so we can put you in a future episode of Seeing Green. And I'm going to let you get out of here. This is David Green for Rob Seeing Solo Abasolo, signing off.
The market is changing and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals and enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and bam! Instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only. Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own. Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.